The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Now, 51551 for your texts. 1998, 28th of July, 1998. Deirdre Jacob went into Newbridge Town to do a few errands around lunchtime. And she was last seen just after 3 o'clock. She disappeared without trace in broad daylight. You might have seen Barry Cummins' report about the disappearance of Deirdre Jacob on Primetime last week, and you would have seen her dad, Michael, talk about his daughter. Well, Michael joins me in studio. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Thanks for coming in. Right, what about last week then, last Thursday night? Has there been a reaction to it?
Yes, there has been a very good reaction. The incident room at Kildare remained open quite late on Thursday night. A good number of calls came in, and there has been calls coming in ever since. So the Gardaí have a number of calls to work with.
Great.
So that's always very encouraging.
Yeah.
We hope that even today now may well encourage someone else. Yeah. To come forward.
And it's difficult telling the story over and over again, and isn't it?
It's very difficult. Yeah. It's very difficult because there's not much you can change about it. It's you tell the story and you make an appeal, but yet we have long since decided to take every opportunity and look for opportunities to keep the story alive.
Okay. Well, let's find out about Deirdre first. So she was 18.
She was 18 at the time.
And she'd a year done already in teacher training college in London.
She had, yes, yes.
So
that's right.
What age was she when she did her leaving cert then?
Well, she done her leaving cert the year before.
Yeah, so yeah, she, yeah. So did it young enough.
She did young yeah, enough, yeah, indeed, yeah. Yeah.
Now, what school did she go to?
She went to Newbridge, to the Holy Family in Newbridge.
Right, yeah. Okay. And what sort of a teenager was she?
She was a very reliable girl, very reliable. She was into lots of activity and that, and she had a great number of friends. She was always in contact with them, and there was a number of them, and they were always together. Mm. They were always coming and going and doing whatever they were doing, They were easy to keep tabs on too. They always let you know where they were, what they wanted to do, and if they were out at a disco or something like that. They were very good in that they always looked after their transport home.
Right.
They had that arranged before they went.
So that's why you call her reliable.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
You were never worrying about her.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. And when she went to London, we were worried about her going to London then. And she was
young.
She was young. She was indeed. But she settled in very quickly, and within a very short time, she had a group of pals with her. And again, that particular group were moving around together and doing what young people do.
So she was home then for her summer holidays.
That's right. She was home for the summer holidays. She was relaxing a little bit, but she was about getting a temporary job at the time she went missing. And that. So
who else is in the family, Michael?
We've another daughter, Kira.
Right.
Yeah.
And Bernie, your wife.
And that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you live how far out of Newbridge Town?
We live just at that time. We lived just a little distance from the edge of the town. But now, at this stage, the town has moved out and has come out to meet us indeed. About 25 minutes walk from the centre of Newbridge.
Right, and people who would have passed through Newbridge back in the day before it was bypassed. It was as you go towards Dublin. Just before you get to the bridge, you would have turned off left, up that way.
No, you would have turned to the right.
Right.
You would have turned right down along the riverside, down in the direction of
But I mean, as you're going towards Dublin, you turn left.
Sorry.
And down towards the college
down,
off that way, yes.
That's right. Nowadays, it's known as the Barrettstown Road.
Barrettstown Road,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on that day then, Were you at work or?
Yes, both Bernie and myself were at work, and at, I know that Bernie was in touch with Deirdre around midday. There was a phone call, and she just mentioned the fact that she would be walking into town a little later on.
Right. And she did.
And she did. She would have left the house just before 1 o'clock. And as I said, a 25-minute walk got her to the centre of Newbridge, where she was dropping in to her grandmother. And she had a few...
And her grandmother, Bernie's mum, had a sweet shop.
That's right.
In the centre of Newbridge.
That's right, in the centre of Newbridge, yeah.
And it was opposite the GAA pitch.
It was right opposite the GAA pitch, alongside what was the Odeon cinema.
Right, okay.
You know, people of a few years would remember that very well.
So she went from there up to get a bank draft.
That's right. She left the grandmother, and she walked up the street after passing the entrance to Georgia Street. She would have walked past the Irish Permanent at the time, and the cameras there picked her up very clearly as she walked right up the street, and then she would have walked past the Bank of Ireland.
CCTV again.
She would have crossed at the lights over Charlotte Street, and then a few paces further on got her to the AIB.
Yeah. And they showed footage there. When you look at that footage back, Michael, what goes through your head?
Well, you know, it's sometimes you it gives you the shivers.
Yeah.
Because there is Deirdre walking up the street as normal, and you know, we often just remark Deirdre was a fast walker, and you can actually notice this in the CCTV. You see her; she's taking long strides and moving quickly.
She's walking with purpose.
Walking with purpose. Yeah. That was always Deirdre walking with purpose. You know, so when you see those images. And you actually see the same images later on as she's making the return journey down the street, and to think then that 25 minutes later, just down the road at our gate, that's the last sighting. That's the last. That's frightening.
It is frightening.
It's frightening. It's frightening.
She was getting a bank draft because she was moving out of... she lived on campus for the first year when she was in university or third level education, and she was going out to live somewhere else in Diggs, and she was sending a bank draft over to one of her mates to put down a deposit. So she went, got the bank draft, there's footage over there, crossed the road to the post office, there's footage over there, so she's posted it off. Out of the post office, she meets a friend, you can see that plain as day as well, and then back down to the shop again. So she, you know, she was spotted twice going past the Irish Permanent thing.
Yeah. She was indeed, yes, yes.
Now, what has happened in the last while is that they've improved what they can see from those CCTV images. What have they done? Your understanding?
Well, all those tapes have been viewed time and time again over the years. But as you know, people who understand those, I just don't. But those old tapes, very, very difficult to view, because when you're viewing them, you're looking at them frame by frame, and sometimes they're switching from one camera to another. But with the advances in technology and digitising those, it's possible to view them much clearer. The result is that a lot of images, background images that were just smudges before this, are now quite clear.
Okay, so faces, registration numbers, all those sort of things, they're clearer now.
They're much, much clearer now, yeah.
Okay, right. We'll stay with the day and then we'll come back to that in a moment. So back then, visited Granny in the shop and then walked the 25 minutes. And how many times was she spotted on the road back out to the house?
She was spotted in total, I think, six times.
Right, okay.
Yeah, some people knew her and others not.
Yeah.
But
And she had a shoulder bag, sort of the size of a, what you'd call a briefcase, but a bag, and it was black, and it was a Caterpillar one, but it just had the big yellow CAT cat.
That's right.
And a lot of people, even who didn't know her, spotted the girl with that bag.
Yes, so, that was the standout description that people who didn't know Deirdre at all, but described the girl carrying the cat bag.
Yeah. And this is particularly chilling, isn't it? Because the last sighting was where?
The last sighting was Deirdre Stan having crossed the road and gone into our gateway, just in the gateway. A motorist who was driving towards Newbridge, his daughter was a passenger, and as they were approaching our gate, a little distance back, they noticed a girl cross the road. And as they passed our gate, the passenger looked across, and she spotted Deirdre just gone into the gateway.
Right. And they reckon that was just after 3 o'clock.
And that was just after 3 o'clock. They were able to be very accurate with the time because of the business that those people were doing in town.
They had an appointment or whatever.
They had an appointment, and they could pinpoint it very much.
Okay. What time did Bernie get home at then?
Bernie got home. It was after 6 o'clock.
Right.
She was concerned.
Nearly immediately.
Immediately, she was concerned, because when she came to the door, she found the door was what we used to call at the time double locked. The security lock was on, which wouldn't be the case if there was anyone home. So that alerted her straight away, and then gone inside then and found that there was no trace of Deirdre. Whatever.
Did she have a mobile phone back then?
No. Right. It's extraordinary how we've changed in that length of time. Mobile phones were just about coming out, and even the few phones that were out were big chunks of things.
So Bernie arrives home. She knows there's something wrong.
Yep.
She rings you.
No, I'm in from work then. Right. Shortly after that, or maybe within a half an hour or so after that, and we set about contacting Deirdre's friends, or the homes of Deirdre's friends, and to find out if Deirdre had been in touch with them or whatever, but we drew a blank on all like that. And then Kira and myself then drove back into town, around the town, back home again. We've done that trip a number of times, expecting maybe to know us along the road. But that wasn't the case. So having done that for a while, we decided then to go to the Newbridge Gardaí.
And because Deirdre was so reliable, that's why I suppose you went straight into emergency mode.
Absolutely, indeed. Deirdre would never change her plans without telling us. She would always contact us and let us know if she was going to be late or if she was doing something else that hadn't been planned. She would always let us know. So that straight away, that was a big concern. Yeah. Big concern, when we didn't find her, and by looking around the street and looking around the road, we just knew that there was something amiss.
And it was broad daylight.
It was
summer's day.
It was. It was. You know,
and no trace. Not has anything been found.
Nothing whatsoever.
Nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing at all. Nothing at all. It was. It was a nice, bright summer's day, and at that time of the year, you have daylight up until
10 o'clock.
Ten o'clock. But there was absolutely no trace. No trace.
It's 20 and a half years on. How does the passing of time, days go into days and
weeks go into weeks? precisely that. You're thinking about something today, and for the time you're thinking of it, it consumes you, and that time then will spill over into the next day, the next day, into the next day, and then weeks, months. You know, sometimes you look and think about the time that has passed, and you know, the 20 and a half years seems like 100 years. Mm. And then again, it seems like if it's only the other day.
Blink of an eye. Yeah.
Blink of an eye.
I know that on the 10th anniversary of her disappearance, they mocked up a picture of what Deirdre would look like when she was 28.
Yes, yes.
I would imagine you think about where would she be at in her life.
Well, look, that's one of the great difficulties of it, because you're reminded very forcibly at any type of family events, and even, you know, group photographs that have been taken since 1998. And it gives you a jolt. Why isn't Deirdre in that photograph? Yeah. You know, she should be there. But that's not the case.
And then her three friends who featured on that report by Barry Cummins, like, you can see where they are in their lives. And
yes, indeed. You know, they were absolutely magnificent in how they told their account. You know, and they were an extraordinary group. The four of them, and you know, on Barry's program, there were photographs there at different stages at the different schools and different events and whatever. So it was quite easy to see that there were a group of four girls that was almost inseparable.
I'd imagine over the years, have you gone through every possible theory of what happened?
We have, you know. Yeah. We have looked at it so many different directions. We have been lucky in that we've been able to work very closely with the Gardaí, and particularly with Inspector Seamus Rotwell, as he is now. We have had long and long discussions about what might have happened, you know, but unfortunately with the lack of information, we just have not been able to.
And did you, up until, because we have to get to last year, when it was announced that they've reclassified Deirdre's case from a disappearing, a missing person, to a murder case, up until then, was there in your head, the back of your mind, that maybe one day she'd walk in?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course, you always have that. You always hold on to a glimmer of light, and we always, even still, there are times when you'll feel, look, you know, Deirdre may be out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know. But the investigation is
it's a murder case.
It's a murder case.
So they announced that last August.
That's right.
Right. And you made an appeal on the anniversary, the 20th anniversary, at the end of July.
Yes, right.
They weren't linked. Did they find out something as a result of your appeal?
Well, not in terms of announcing the reclassification, because the work that came to that point with the Gardaí had been going on for months. It was how the investigation has gone over the years, and about this time last year, a new group of Gardaí started work on it, and were able to put in quite an amount of time on analysing the case and analysing every statement and questionnaire and that. So they were coming to that. They were coming to that conclusion that they would have to reclassify it as a murder case.
Does that allow them to put more effort and time into it?
It does. It does indeed. Yeah. Although we would have to say that they have been always putting in great effort.
And how, I know you would have known that they were going to announce that they were reclassifying Deirdre's case, but when, you know, do you switch off the news? Do you shut out the newspapers, or what do you do? How do you handle that? No.
Well, it's not possible to switch off the news and ignore the newspapers. It's just not possible. We knew that announcement was coming on that day. We were aware of that, but yet when we heard those words over the radio on that morning, it was shattering. It was like a thunderbolt hitting you. You know, it was really, really difficult. You were stunned. Mm. We were stunned. And
you did a very moving appeal at the end of Barry Cummins' piece, where you were asking people, you know, please, 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 if you have any information, and we'll give the phone number out for the Garda station in Kildare. What do you think? It's a long time ago, isn't it? I was desperately trying to, you know, in my head, figure out what I was doing around then. And that, you know, I have a rough idea what I was doing for the whole summer, but I'd have no idea what I was doing on that particular day, unless I looked up a diary or something like that. Yeah. What are you hoping for?
Well, we're hoping that there is at least one person, and maybe more, that has information out there, and we hope then that by reminding them of what was going on at the time, and in Kildare, that summer, the whole county was alive with the anticipation of what the Kildare team was going to do.
9 days previous, there we'd beaten Laois in the semi final, the Leinster semi final.
That's right.
Everyone was looking forward to that Sunday after Deirdre's disappearance, when we were playing Meath in the Leinster final, which we went on to win.
That's right.
So that'll put them.
Yeah, the Kildare Laois match, as you say, that was just a few days before that, and Deirdre was at that match with her friends.
Right. Okay.
You know.
One of the Gardaí involved, I have a quote from here: in the passage of time, people might change their opinion or beliefs or the moral compass they had back then, and we wish for them to come forward now.
That's right.
So if somebody was providing an alibi for somebody at the time, they thought that was the best thing to do, with the passage of time.
With the passage of time, we would hope. And you know, sometimes, lifestyles change, and people maybe who have held back information for whatever reason, maybe they're protecting someone, or they didn't think it all that important or whatever at the time. Now, those people are 20 years older, and maybe much more mature, and maybe can look at things in a different light, and maybe they're in a freer situation to come forward. But the main thing for them to do is to just consider what the right thing to do is at this point. You know, we all probably bottle up things and hold things back, and we don't, for whatever reason. But in this case, look, the right thing to do is to come forward and give that information to the Gardaí.
And the smallest bit of information, you might think it's insignificant, but it could be important.
It could be very important. Look, I describe this investigation as a giant jigsaw, with pieces scattered all around, and it will only become clear when those tiny pieces
are put together.
Yeah. You know, and that's what we're actually hoping for.
Will you stay with us? We have to take a commercial break. I'm speaking to Michael Jacob about the disappearance of his daughter Deirdre more than 20 years ago.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're speaking to Michael Jacob. His daughter Deirdre disappeared on the 28th of July, 1998. I don't know if this is any good, but we went into the archives, Michael, and we just have the 5-7 live from that day. This is Emer Woodfull, and it's a minute and 20 seconds of, and that would have been, this would have went out on air 2 hours after the last sighting of Deirdre.
You're listening to Radio 1. This is 5-7 Live with Emer Woodfull. In today's top stories, Partnership 2000, the government and the social partners discuss it in the light of the current boom.
Well, there's no doubt that we need to look at how do you manage a successful economy. I mean, these partnership programmes were put together in a time of crisis. We're now into a successful economy. How do we manage that?
And the Supreme Court decision on the Hockey Challenge could mean significant delays for the Moriarty Tribunal. On sport, Yvonne Judge.
Marco Pantani retains his handsome lead in the Tour de France as he finishes on the wheel of Jan Ullrich today. Celtic held a press conference in Dublin and Rangers say the 32-year-old Colin Hendry is too expensive.
On traffic, Trevor Keegan.
In Carlow, roadworks are in place on the M3 between Cavan Town and Butler's Bridge. In Galway, with races getting underway about now, it's very busy heading out to the course on Monavay Road and Tuam Road.
News now from Anne Casson.
Good evening. The Supreme Court has ruled that Moriarty Tribunal was properly constituted.
That's from Drive Time on that day. It might just jog somebody's memory. Now, I was looking at Chief Superintendent Brian Sutton, and he was saying that Larry Murphy is a person of interest in relation to Deirdre's case. So what's your understanding there?
Yes, that's right. He is one of a number of people of interest that the Gardaí are looking at very closely, and there are also other lines of inquiry as well, and it's all part of one big, very big investigation. And this is coming back to our appeal. We are hoping and asking people to keep a very open mind on Deirdre's case, because the investigation, as I say, is as a number of lines of inquiry, and it's important to people to look at it in that way.
Mm. Because a number of reports said that a fellow inmate of his said that Larry got drunk and he said that he had abducted a girl outside Newbridge, and that's the connection, isn't it?
That's right. That's the connection there, and Gardaí are following that, as they are following others.
I read in one of the articles from back in 1998 that nobody spotted Deirdre walking into Newbridge that day, and yet you told us that six people spotted her on the way out. Is that, do you think that is still significant?
Well, obviously, we would like to hear from people who might have spotted her on the way in. She wasn't spotted anywhere along the road.
Would she have taken a lift?
No. We know that for a fact, that she wouldn't take a lift, because since then we've heard of people offering Deirdre lifts and she'd say, no, I'm walking.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever happened to her, it happened forcibly.
Probably. Yeah.
This is a sort of personal question, but I would imagine it put an awful lot of pressure on the family over the years. Did it yourself and Bernie, or did it, or did you get stronger as a result of Deirdre's?
Well, I think we got stronger. It did put pressure on us, because one person was saying, look, should we do this? Should we do that? And that's probably normal. But I think we have gelled together stronger. Yeah. And our aim all the way along the line over the 20 years is to do whatever we can and try to figure out, is there something else that we can actually do or should be doing?
And the end game is to bring her home, I suppose.
Indeed it is. That's our plea to people out there who are holding information, that to please help us, because that's our main aim, and our main task is to bring Deirdre home.
I was struck by the fact that you're still in that house, and that every time you leave the house and travel the road along Barrettstown into Newbridge, that you're reminded constantly of Deirdre and her disappearance.
Yeah, we are reminded constantly. Each time we drive through the gateway, you picture it, and sometimes Deirdre's image becomes quite clear when you're passing through the gateway. That's where she was, and along the road is the same. You might even spot a girl of similar build, and you blink for a second. You know, the same goes if when one is in Newbridge or anywhere. You know, whenever we're travelling in airport or a train station, the same. You get the same almost earth wrenching thoughts. Yeah. You see a figure, and is that Deirdre? Yeah. You know.
Did you ever think of leaving that?
No. I think we can best try to find what happened, Deirdre, from where we are.
What were the last words you exchanged with Deirdre? Can you remember?
I remember Deirdre had been away for the weekend prior to that, and so she was when she came home on the that Monday night, she was going to great lengths describing her weekend in Carrickmacross and at a couple of nightclubs up there. And I know she was inquiring, had we been up to a particular nightclub? I've forgotten the name now. And her comment, her quip back was, you've been nowhere yet.
The Oasis.
It was the Oasis. That's right. Yeah.
So that was, and you got up and went to work before she
that's
was
right.
out of bed.
Yes, indeed.
It's do you know the way people say, like I say to my kids now, always say, I love you, you know. And it's so important, isn't it?
That you
leave, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, Deirdre's last actions was she had gone to bed, and she was a great letter writer. So she was sitting up in the bed writing letters to some of her friends describing the weekend that she had just had.
And would she have written to you from London?
Oh, she did, yeah. She wrote regularly from London, yeah. Yeah.
Would you have those?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Cherished possessions.
Yes.
So detectives in Kildare, I'll give you the number there, 045-521222. You've moved that there, and I'd like to sign that there. That's, yeah, 045-521222. Or there's a confidential line, 1800-666-111. 1800-666-111. Of course, if they find out something, there might be information you don't really want to know. You know, nightmarish stuff. That's the other part of it, isn't it? I really hope that this has been of some assistance. That somebody out there who didn't see the program or hasn't heard you talk before, that it'll spark something.
Hopefully, and again, just to appeal to everyone, to anyone who has any information. Look, don't hold on to it any longer. Now is the right time. Do the right thing. And help us bring Deirdre home.
Somebody says, I pray for Deirdre every night, and heartbreaking. I was 20 the day before Deirdre went missing. I'm 40 now. Her disappearance always resonates with me. And I hope the Jacob family can get closure and find out what happened to their daughter. I was about Deirdre's age when she disappeared, and I've always thought how sad it was. Wish her family all the best. If someone out there will have a stab of conscience now. Hope someone out there will have a stab of conscience now, says Mary. And I still remember every detail from when it happened. The primetime programme had me in tears, says that person. Michael, mind yourself, and Bernie and Kira. And thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Ray. Thank you indeed.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.